Good morning and welcome to Overeaters Anonymous, a Vision for You Big Book study. My name is Lynn S. and I am a recovered compulsive overeater in Toronto, Canada. Today is Friday, May the 22nd, 2026, and we're continuing our study of the Big Book in the chapter More About Alcoholism. We're on page 39 and we're three lines up from the bottom, reading Fred Would Not Believe. Today's readers are the 12 Steps, Mary F., 12 Traditions, Tenzin P., and readers of the text, Jane S., Colleen M., and Tamara C. The share ID for yesterday, Thursday, May the 21st, the 7 a.m. meeting, 23480, that's 23480, and the 10 a.m. meeting, 23481. OA Preamble. Overeaters Anonymous is a fellowship of individuals who, through shared experience, strength, and hope, are recovering from compulsive overeating. We welcome everyone who wants to stop eating compulsively. There are no dues or fees for members. We are self-supporting through our own contributions, neither soliciting nor accepting outside donations. OA is not affiliated with any public or private organization, political movement, ideology, or religious doctrine. We take no position on outside issues. Our primary purpose is to abstain from compulsive eating and compulsive food behaviors and to carry the message of recovery through the 12 steps of OA to those who still suffer. Our sole purpose. OA's fifth tradition states, each group has but one primary purpose, to carry its message to the compulsive overeater who still suffers. At A Vision for You Big Book Studies, our message is that people who suffer from compulsive overeating can recover through abstinence and the practice of the 12 steps and 12 traditions of Overeaters Anonymous. And this morning, Mary F. is going to read the 12 steps for us. Good morning, Mary. Mary, please press star one to unmute.
Good morning. Can you hear me now?
Yep, gotcha. Thank you.
All right. Sorry about that. It's Mary F. calling in from Pennsylvania today, and I am a very grateful compulsive overeater. The 12 steps of Overeaters Anonymous. One, we admitted we were powerless over food, that our lives had become unmanageable. Two, came to believe that a power greater than ourselves could restore us to sanity. Three, made a decision to turn our will and our lives over to the care of God as we understood Him. Four, made a searching and fearless moral inventory of ourselves. Five, admitted to God, to ourselves, and to another human being the exact nature of our wrongs. Six, were entirely ready to have God remove all these defects of character. Seven, humbly asked Him to remove our shortcomings. Eight, made a list of all persons we had harmed and became willing to make amends to them all. Nine, made direct amends to such people wherever possible, except when to do so would injure them or others. 10, continued to take personal inventory, and when we were wrong, promptly admitted it. 11, sought through prayer and meditation to improve our conscious contact with God as we understood Him, praying only for the knowledge of His will for us and the power to carry that out. 12, having had a spiritual awakening as the result of these steps, we tried to carry this message to compulsive overeaters and to practice these principles in all our affairs. Thank you for the opportunity to give service this morning.
Thank you, Mary F. And Tenzin P. is going to read the 12 traditions. Good morning, Tenzin.
Good morning, everyone. Tenzin P. checking in from New York. And here are the 12 traditions. One, our common welfare should come first. Personal recovery depends upon OA unity. Two, for our group purpose, there is but one ultimate authority, a loving God as he may express himself in our group conscience. Our leaders are but trusted servants. They do not govern. 3, the only requirement for OA membership is a desire to stop eating compulsively. 4, each group should be autonomous except in matters affecting other groups or OA as a whole. 5, each group has but one primary purpose, to carry its message to the compulsive overeater who still suffers. 6, an OA group ought never endorse, finance, or lend the OA name to any related facility or outside enterprise, lest problems of money, property, and prestige divert us from our primary purpose. 7, every OA group ought to be fully self-supporting, declining outside contributions. 8, Overeaters Anonymous should remain forever non-professional, but our service centers may employ special workers. 9, OA as such ought never be organized, but we may create service boards or committees directly responsible to those they serve. 10, Overeaters Anonymous has no opinion on outside issues, hence the OA name ought never be drawn into public controversy. 11, our public relations policy is based on attraction rather than promotion. We need always maintain personal anonymity at the level of press, radio, films, television, and other public media of communication. And 12, anonymity is the spiritual foundation of all our traditions, ever reminding us to place principles before personalities. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Tenzin P. How our meeting works. Our meeting focuses on the directions for recovery described in the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous. We read a paragraph or two from the literature, then stop and share on what was read. Anyone can share, but we ask that you keep your sharing to the topic and literature we are discussing, and that you keep your sharing to approximately 3 minutes. Singleness of purpose reminds us to identify as compulsive overeaters only. Our abstinence requirement for moderators is 1 year, and for readers is 6 months. There is no abstinence requirement for sharing on topic. This meeting does request that your sharing be directly linked to what was read. We are sharing what the directions in the book mean to us. To share, press star 1 to unmute. Once you are done sharing, let us know by saying pass, then press star 1 on your phone. In order to have a quiet meeting, everyone's phone except the speakers should be muted. And today we resume our study of the Big Book. We're in the chapter More About Alcoholism on page 39. We're 3 lines up from the bottom. Fred would not believe. And we're reading till that end of the paragraph. And this morning, Jane S. is going to read for us. Good morning, Jane.
Good morning, Lynn. Thank you for the welcome. Thank you for your service and everyone who's doing service. My name is Jane S., and I am currently hailing from New Hampshire. I'm extremely grateful to say that I'm a recovered compulsive overeater today. Fred would not believe himself an alcoholic, much less accept a spiritual remedy for his problem. We told him what we knew about alcoholism, and he was interested, and he conceded that he had some of the symptoms, but he was a long way from admitting that he could do nothing about it himself. He was positive that this humiliating experience, plus the knowledge he had acquired, would keep him sober the rest of his life. Self-knowledge would fix it. Wow, that was me. I can definitely relate to Fred. So vividly, actually. I got recovered for a while. I thought I was recovered. Let's put it that way. When I look back in hindsight, I truly wasn't fully recovered because I really hadn't done the steps all the way. I'd lost some weight. I lost a lot of weight, and I had started looking really, really good. And you know, I took my will back. I started taking credit for my weight loss, my spirituality, my good look, making everything look so good on the outside. And that's what I relate to with him. You know, things were looking good on the outside. He thought he could do it. And, you know, it says right here that he would not accept the spiritual remedy. Well, I have a spiritual malady. It's this spiritual malady, this disease, and I wake up with it every morning. And I accept that today, and I surrender to that fact today. But a spiritual malady, the only solution is God and a spiritual awakening. And I had to admit, after 15 years of being in and out of this program, that I had to step back, step aside, and start over again. And I did, almost 2 years ago. I stepped back into this program. I got in the middle of the herd. I got a sponsor who I related to, and she started me through the steps and in a different way, different in some areas, the same in some areas, but the difference was I was being rigorously honest this time. I was going from the inside out instead of the outside, because I had identified myself out for so long, like you guys all said, oh, I got to work these steps like my hair is on fire. And I just thought that was so over the top. And today I get it. I actually said to my sponsor, I need to work the steps like my hair is on fire. Because, you know, I thought I knew. And the knowledge that I had, and I'm a chef, I've been in the food industry my whole entire life. I know how to eat, healthy. But I don't know how to eat abstinently, and I don't have that power, and I realize that today. So I had to fully surrender to that fact, accept that fact, and let go, and let God come in and start the transformation that he'd been working on for quite some time, over the last decade and a half of my life since I'd come in recovery. But I had never really fully surrendered, and I'd never really conceded to my innermost self that I am a real compulsive overeater, and that there are certain foods and behaviors that I cannot do anymore, and that's okay. But I have to be rigorously honest, practice acceptance, love, and tolerance in all I do, and I get to do that one day at a time, one moment at a time, and that has been the change for me. That's the spiritual awakening that allows me to live in a recovered state of mind today, free from a lot of the obsessions that I used to have. So with that, I will pass, and I look forward to hearing everybody else. Thanks for letting me be of service.
Thank you, Jane S., for getting us started. The line is now open for sharing on what we just read.
Okay.
And although we value your experience, we ask that you limit your share to every third day so that others may share their experience too. So if you shared on Wednesday or Thursday, please step back and let others have their turn. And please say your name just once. It really does help me hear everybody. Who would like to share?
Rachel B.
Lisa Joe B.
Harlan G.
Mm-hmm.
Okay,
Nancy.
Let me tell you who I did hear, because I know
Nancy
I missed a couple of people. Yeah, okay, hang on, please, everybody. I heard Rachel B., Lisa Joe B., Harlan G., Pete B., and Nancy P., but I know I missed somebody. Who did I miss, please?
Lisa P.
I'm sorry, I still didn't catch your name.
Melissa G.
Oh, my goodness. Okay. Thank you, Melissa.
Okay.
Good heavens.
Acknowledgement. Thank you.
Okay, let me tell you who I'd have now. We've got a great lineup. Rachel B., Lisa Joe B., Harlan G., Pete B., Nancy P., Melissa C. Okie dokie. Rachel B., please share with us.
Good morning, everybody. Rachel B. here in Illinois, recovered compulsive overeater just for today. I really like this. I really like this part in the big book. I could really relate to it, and it seemed like for me, you know where it talks about in the big book that we're good at everything else. A lot of us are good at a lot of other thing else in our life, But when it comes to food, not only can we not be trusted, I can't be trusted. I can't discern the true from the false. But also, you know, I was always trying to do it myself. I was trying to handle this thing and trying to get this thing. And I just couldn't do it. I couldn't grasp it. And it's just been a complete miracle for me in my life that today, you know, that I get to do that. And today I, you know, things aren't great. Things aren't peachy in my life, but they are. And I'm just really, really been able to rely on God's powers. It's his story. It's his miracle in a new way like never before. And I'm seeing transformation in my life every single day. And so that's the miracle. And I'm going to pass. Thank you so much for letting me share.
Thank you, Rachel B. from Illinois. Lisa Jo B., you're up, followed by Harlan G. Good morning, Lisa Jo.
Good morning, Lynn. Thank you for your service. I'm a compulsive overeater in Denver. Yeah, self-knowledge availed me nothing. I just, with my self-knowledge, it was like I was beating my head against a brick.
We've lost you, Lisa Jo.
Okay, can you hear me now?
Yep.
Yeah, I don't know what happened there. So I don't know where I stopped. When I was in the disease, I kept trying to think myself out of it, and I didn't know any better. And in retrospect, I have deep compassion for myself. Because I was trying, but my self-knowledge availed me nothing because on my own, I can't do this. I can't do this thing called recovery on my own. I need God's help. And I started praying. When I worked with this one sponsor, she said something when I finally started listening to her, and I glommed onto it and made it into a prayer, and that is, God, help me to accept your help. And I remember I was sitting in my car drinking my unsweetened iced tea, and I kept saying that over and over. And all of a sudden, God opened my heart, and like he cracked me open like an egg. And I felt close to him, finally. And it wasn't on my own self-will that that happened. There was not a formula. There was no thinking myself into surrender. It just happened. And I'm so grateful for that because I beat myself up for so long and beat my head up against that brick wall for so long and kept falling back into the food because I felt like I needed to think myself out of what got me into it was my thoughts. I'm terminally diseased with compulsive overeating, and I'm not terminally unique, but I have a deadly disease that needs to be in a state of recovery that is only possible by the grace of God and working these 12 steps. And with that, I pass. Thank you.
Thank you, Lisa Jo B. from Colorado. Next, we have Harlan G., followed by Pete B. Hi, Harlan.
Hey, Lynn, thank you. Don't be so gentle with your reminder. I'm not home right now. I'm walking. This is the story of Harry Brick. This is a real story. He wrote a story in the first edition called A Different Slant. Why is Harry so important? Well, the reason that he's important is sometimes we have an idea that an alcoholic is in a dirty trench coat, lays in the gutter, and drinks whiskey from a bottle, and there's a paper bag around it, or that a compulsive overeater has to weigh a certain amount or whatever. And that's not true. We come in all shapes. We come in all sizes. Some of us look very preppy. Some of us look very country, whatever it is. But the bottom line is, there is no profile to what we are or, you know, how we are, how we look. Well, let's take a look here. Fred would not believe himself an alcoholic. In other words, he wouldn't take step one, much less accept a spiritual remedy for his problem. Don't take one, don't need two. We told him what we knew of about alcoholism. What did they tell him? They told him that it is a physical allergy and a twist of the mind, a mind that drives you into the food in search of relief from the intenable pain of not eating, the buildup of emotions, the way we feel. Dr. Silkworth says, restless, irritable, and discontented. And this is what our mind is doing. And then the allergy takes over once it's inside of us, making it impossible to stop. And so he was interested and conceded he had some of the symptoms. In other words, he was a little bit pregnant, but he was a long way from admitting he could do nothing about it himself. Now, here's where we run into trouble. We are successful, and there are hundreds of people on the line today whose resumes would astound me. Some of you are successful at this, and some of you are highly successful at that. But there's one thing we have as a common denominator. We are utter, complete failures when it comes to putting this disease in check for a long period of time on our own. And he believed that self-knowledge would fix it. And one of the key sentences that we're going to get to in this chapter is going to come on page 43. And on page 43, the last paragraph, we're not there yet, but we will get there. It says, his defense must come from a higher power. I do not have any earthly solution to this disease. And people help, yes. I get identification through people. I get
time,
comfort,
please.
Commiserate. All right, I'm glad you did it that way. I'll let Pete take over, and with that, I will pass. Lynn, thanks for your service.
Thank you, Harlan G. from Arizona, and Pete B. from Pennsylvania. It's your turn. Good morning, Pete.
Good morning, Lynn. Thanks so much for taking the meeting. You're doing a great job, and I appreciate your service. My name is Pete B. I'm a compulsive overeater, and I'm recovered today by God's grace and mercy. We told him what we knew about alcoholism, right? So just to reiterate what Harlan just said, what did they knew about alcoholism then is the same that we know about alcoholism now, right? We know it's an allergy of the body. It's an allergy of the body, and we know it's an obsession of the mind, the obsession that somehow, some way, we'll be able to control and manage our food, like other people's appear to control and manage their food. They didn't know what caused people to drink. I don't know of anywhere in the big book where it says, this is why we drink, this is why they drink. It doesn't say anything about buildup of emotions or not buildup of emotions. As a matter of fact, it calls the physical part of our disease, as well as the mental part of our disease, phenomena, which means we know it exists, but we don't know where it comes from. You know, this idea that if I somehow learn to weigh and measure my emotions, right, by somehow implementing some kind of tools or resources that our fellowship have contrived to address the problem, that I'm going to be okay. And maybe you will, but I wasn't, and I couldn't be. You know, the opening share talked about the spiritual malady. What is that? What is the spiritual malady? Well, the word malady means disease. My spiritual malady, it doesn't mean we're bad. It doesn't mean we're broken. It doesn't mean somebody damaged us and we're the victim of somebody's wrongdoings and we're destined to be failures and unable to utilize our resources for the rest of our days. It doesn't mean that. It simply means, for me, maybe for you it means something different, is that I put my trust and reliance and faith into entities which could not solve my problem. I put my trust and reliance in human power and mental defenses and codes of morals and better philosophies of life, as if somehow those were going to suffice to enable me to bring into consciousness with sufficient force the memory of the pain and suffering caused by food, and I'd make a choice not to eat again. Well, there is no human power that can do that. There's no new code of morals. No, being in the middle of the herd isn't going to do it. I must find a power. Can't be human power, right? Because the herd's a bunch of humans. I must find a power to remove the merciless obsession. That power is not going to change the fact that I had this abnormal reaction.
Time
that'll have to the day I die. But today I've been restored to sanity the way my creator intended me to be. And I'm really grateful for that. So I'm going to pass. Thanks.
Thank you, Pete B. from Pennsylvania. Nancy P., good morning.
Hi, good morning, Lynn. Good morning, everybody. Nancy P., recovered in Western Massachusetts. So Fred would not believe himself an alcoholic. I got to say that I didn't want to be a compulsive overeater. Of all the addictions, it's the least sexy, you know. At least alcoholics could be tortured artists. Drug addicts could be tortured artists or musicians or something. But me as a compulsive overeater was, talk about unlovely, that would be the best, you know, I could ever hope to be is just unlovely, and I was far worse than that. But I didn't, the whole spiritual remedy was beyond me. And I have, you know, no use for God at all and no use for prayer and all that stuff. I don't do that. But I do have use for serenity, happy, joyous, free living, helping other people, comprehending the word serenity and knowing peace. That I have a lot of use for. So I got into, by the time I was ready to get better, I fortuitously didn't know that I was ready, but I found a vision for you, and I got a sponsor who was about as empathetic and cuddly as a brick wall and as friendly as a grizzly bear. But she knew this book inside out, and she told me what she knew about alcoholism, about compulsive overeating. And I did every single thing that she said to do, because I can tell you that when I tried to do it myself, when I tried to attack this problem head on, because, you know, as others have said, you know, there's not too many dumb people in OA. We have doctors and lawyers and teachers and nurses and, you know, business people and all kinds of people that have a lot of expertise. I'm not stupid. But I tried to attack this problem head on. I failed. And not only did I failed completely, absolutely, entirely, utterly, and nothing ever helped. And those are my five most important words in the whole book. And so I was told, she told me what she knew about alcoholism. And I'm going to veer off this. When I tell people what I know about compulsive overeating, I expect them to do what I say immediately and as hard as they can as well. Because all I have for sale in my store is what I have, is my experience, strength, and hope. And my sponsor specifically told me, don't ever compromise with sponsees. And one time I had a sponsee, and she, you know, there was a problem. And she said, well, I want to do it this way. And I remembered what my sponsor said, and I said, be flexible, because my sponsor wasn't flexible. And that relationship ended pretty fast, because it became obvious that there could be no compromise. And then most recently, I was talking to another woman that we thought we would work together, and she, too, didn't want to do it the way that I did it. And I said, you know, unfortunately, I'm not going to be able to work with you, because if I do, in the end, that's not going to be good for me. And I do this work in the very, very end. I mean, I want to help other people. I want to be available. I am. But I do it in the end because it's good for me. Like if the cure or the solution was to smoke a pack of cigarettes every day, I'm not sure I'd be as on board. And so that's what I do. I tell people what I know about compulsive overeating. I'll wrap up. And they can do it or not do it. And I tell them that. Do it or don't do it. I don't care. You should care. And that's where I was. That's what my sponsor told me. She didn't judge me. She didn't care. I mean, maybe she cared. She certainly never said so. And I kind of care, too, only that I hope that they get better, but it's not up to me. And with that, I'll pass.
Thank you, Nancy P. from Massachusetts. Melissa C., good morning.
Hey, good morning, Lynn. Thank you so much for your service. I'm Melissa C. I'm a recovered compulsive overeater. I live in New York. And you know, when I read this, I think, why didn't humiliation work? You know, I've had, but it didn't. I mean, because that's human power, actually, because it's relying on my recollection, on the consequences of what this disease has done to me. And, you know, when I read about that, I think about the humiliating experiences I've had and how in some of the humiliating experiences I've had that don't involve compulsive eating was really effective to get me to change my behavior, because that's, you know, that most human behavior, most behaviors can be changed by rewards and punishments, you know, rewards and consequences. And, you know, when I was younger, I partied too much and but I don't have a drug addiction, and it got me into trouble. And I failed out of college my freshman year, and it was humiliating. My parents were really pissed at me. I had to pay them back the money. I had to, you know, for me, I had to go to a community college. I had to work. I had to earn my way back to go to school again. And I didn't party like that anymore, because that humiliation was enough. You know, I also ran up a debt in my early 20s. And, you know, my parents, God love them, you know, they're gone now. They bailed me out, and I had to pay them back. And it was humiliating. And, you know, I didn't like that feeling. And so I don't have a spending problem, and that worked. Fast forward to food. Nope. I have been so humiliated by this disease. If, you know, I've lost and gained and lost and gained. And I've had people, you know, who have like said things to me that was like, you know, gut wrenching. When I think about humiliation, it really is how this looks to other people, right? How other people respond. That's what humiliates. It's not that internal thing. I don't feel internally humiliated. I feel a sense of humiliation at other people seeing the damage that this has done. And, you know, and having been morbidly obese, walking on a plane, having people look away because they don't want you to sit next to them because you're going to take up too much, you know, space. And feeling like, you know what, I don't want to be sitting next to me either. Humiliation didn't work. The only thing that works if you're truly powerless is something more powerful. And that, this chapter drives the point home, can only be God. And thanks. With that, I'll pass.
Thank you, Melissa C. from New York. For those of us who might have come on the line a little bit later, I'll just let you know where we are. This morning, we're continuing our study of the big book in the chapter, More About Alcoholism. We're on page 39, three lines up from the bottom, Fred would not believe. So the line is now open for sharing on what we just read. Although we value your experience, we ask that you limit your share to every third day so that others may share their experience too. So if you shared on Wednesday or Thursday, please step back and let others have their turn. And please say your name just once. It really does help me hear everybody. Who would like to share?
Nick F. in Tennessee.
Ken W.H.
Larry K.
Okay, I've got Nick F., Ken W.H., Larry K., who else? Anybody? Okay, well, we'll go with these three, and we'll pick up again later. Nick F. from Tennessee, please go ahead.
Good morning, Lynn. Thank you for your service. Can I be heard?
Yep, got you here.
All right. Good morning, family. I'm Nick F. in Tennessee, and I'm a compulsive overeater. And this proverb says he was a long way from admitting that he could do nothing about it himself. It sounds just like where I was in my relapse. You know, in November last year, I had to look at my life and, you know, the scale, I saw the scale go from 560, sure, to 198. But then I saw it go to 230, to 240, to 250, all the way back up to 315 pounds. And the replay of, I know how to lose weight. You know, I know how to do this. I know how to pack my meals for a week. But I neglected to realize that I could pack all this, I can pack all this stuff in the refrigerator all I want to. But if I don't have no power between the time to eat and the time to eat, I don't know how to feed myself. I was in Vermont. I was delivering babies. Like somebody said, I'm not a stupid girl. As a matter of fact, I may be too smart for my own good. That's for the newcomer and the person that relapsed. Like, I overthink things all the time. You know, I even overthink a share and realize that I need to be here. I need to just open my mouth and say something and tell people where I am. And my truth is, you know, this lineup today, it's been messing me up because in the food by myself, I couldn't hear anything. Nutritionist, therapist, I couldn't hear anything. But when I started coming on these lines and I started hearing power to get, I could hear a power through the beers. And it woke me up. So on December the 27th, you know, I just started, I was still eating. I wasn't going to the restaurants anymore, but I was still eating sandwiches, a lot of sandwiches and bowls of cereal. Shit, I can make in the house. You know, but I started going to bed with podcasts in my ears. I had got down on my knees and I said, God, please help me. I'm killing myself. I'm here once again. I have no idea what to do. I done prepped meals that I can't even fix. Food just rotting in the refrigerator. I just started all day long, more than one meal a day. Just I'm talking about awake me, just listening to the big book of podcasts all day long. I was putting myself in position for a miracle. I need a miracle. And I love what I hear here. You know, you can't necessarily help me. I can't help me. The meals in the refrigerator can't help me. I need a miracle. And sometimes I know that I'm a lot closer to God than I really think I am, but food was my God. It left me, and then it came back. So sometimes I feel like I'm really distant away from God. But the fact today that I can sit here at a table and eat this small little cute breakfast instead of enough food for a family, and I know that it's God. But I really struggle to believe in God. When I hear a lot of, like, today I know God is in the room and on this line. It's that I passed.
Thank you, Nick F. from Tennessee. Next up, we have Ken W.H., followed by Larry K. Good morning, Ken.
Good morning, Lynn. Thank you. This is Ken W.H., recovered compulsive overeater in North Carolina. I'm struck by the last sentence, self-knowledge would fix it. I know it says later in the book, self-knowledge avails us nothing. Or later, or whatever else in the book, I have to retranslate or just rephrase the way that reads, self-knowledge. Well, knowledge of self is the problem for me. I have lots of knowledge. I wasn't a stupid kid. I did pretty well in high school, and when I finally got my ducks in a row, I did well in college and graduate school and did really well. And so I had a lot of knowledge. I knew a lot of things. I was able to think clearly in many respects. But knowledge of self is what I avoided like the plague. I didn't want to know who I was. I was afraid of who I was. I was afraid of what I would find down there. I was afraid that I would actually learn the truth about myself that they told me over and over again as I was being initiated into a fraternity, that I was lower than whale poop in the deepest part of the deepest ocean. And I was told that, and, you know, there's a part of me that grasped a hold of that and said, you know, you're right. How did you know? That's the way I felt about myself. That was my self-knowledge, and it was skewed. It was just so out of whack. It was so unreal. It wasn't the truth, but I didn't know that. I believed it, I received it, and accepted it. Did that make me a compulsive overeater? No. I have the allergy, and I have the compulsion of the mind. That is not knowledge. That is an awareness of my inability, my weakness, if you will, that I just don't have the power to overcome this thing on my own. And it wasn't until I received the knowledge from this power that, in fact, I wasn't powerful enough. I didn't have enough knowledge and would never, ever get enough knowledge to do this on my own. I needed the power. And it came, and I received it, and I'm healthy today. And I also know some things, but I'm healthy today because of a power greater than myself, and I pass.
Thank you, Ken W.H. from North Carolina. Larry K., good morning.
Hey, Lynn, good morning. I'm Larry K. Thanks for your service. Larry K. recovered from Chicago. Fred, and I love all the shares. Fred was this guy, and he was by all appearances, pretty well adjusted. You know, as someone said, you know, we come in here all sorts of different types of experiences, socioeconomically, educationally, and all other ways. One of the things we have in common, though, is we learn, you know, as was mentioned, we have this allergy of the body, and then we have this mental obsession. And this is what Fred, you know, had to come to this realization. You know, I too also thought that if I just learned and kind of peel away the layers of the onion enough to understand myself on a deep level, that somehow, and process feelings and so forth, that somehow that would be enough to pull me from the quicksand of this disease. I would imagine maybe Fred felt the same way, but that was not to be the case. Now, you know, I go back to Dr. Jung. He talks about, with Roland Hazard, he says, hey, you know, I've seen once in a while, there's some vital spiritual experiences. These occurrences are phenomena. By the way, phenomena and phenomenon, these are something that are observed to occur and to exist. And they are perceived through the senses, and they are scientifically investigated. We know more about alcoholism today than they knew back then. But that, yes, so phenomena can be. That's something we don't know anything about. But where I absolutely agree is that nothing beyond a complete change at a level of depth, like Dr. Jung said, he said these appear to be, to him at the time, in the nature of huge emotional displacements and rearrangements. I'm seeing ideas, emotions, and attitudes which were once the guiding forces of the lives of these men are suddenly cast to one side, and a completely new set of conceptions and motives begin to dominate them. That's what's change. That's what I needed, some change. I needed to be brought into some sort of change. I call it alignment with a higher power. Alignment with God, that would then, for a lifetime, perhaps give me mastery over this. Not mastery. God did for me what I couldn't do for myself. I couldn't. God did it. With that, I pass. Thanks.
Thank you, Larry K. All right, we have time for about four more shares. Who would like that time, please?
Charlotte L.
Charlotte, thank you.
Chris C.
Chris. Two more?
Pedro V.
Sorry, who was that?
Pedro V.
Pedro, okay. Anybody else? Okie dokie. Charlotte.
This is Blake G. from North Carolina.
Blake G. Great. There we go. Okay, Charlotte. Good morning. Please go ahead.
Thank
There we go. Charlotte O from the UK, near Cambridge, compulsive overeater. I flicking back a little bit, you know, it talks about a singular experience of that this, he was positive that this humiliating experience, but the humiliating experience that we see in the previous paragraph is he's ended up in hospital due to his alcoholism. So I'm pretty sure that it wasn't just one experience that was humiliating. I'm pretty sure that, you know, before he'd ended up in the hospital, he'd done a lot of other stuff. But of course, he's then sat there thinking, you know, maybe he was just there to rest his nerves. And, you know, he can't really see the truth about it. And I think, you know, I look back at my eating days and think, yeah, you know, at what point was it going to get through to me that, you know, that the humiliating experience of, you know, being a child and not and having to go to special shops to get my school uniform because my school uniform, you know, didn't fit me. And back in those days, you know, I'm 56, so in those days you couldn't get clothes for fat girls in normal shops, you know, like you can now. I had to go to special shops and I only had a very limited, you know, fashion choice in inverted commas. But, you know, then it continued. And in my early 20s, I did a course to be a PA and, you know, as a secretary. And then the lady that ran the course pointed out that I didn't look that professional because I was so fat and I sweated all the time. And she was right. Really painful and really humiliating, but she was right. You know, but I, like Fred, had these blank spots where, oh, no, this is just one thing. This is just one humiliation. This is just one thing. And I'll be fine. And now I've got this little bit of self-knowledge. Now I've read another book. Now I've, you know, looked at another article. Now I've had a bit more counselling. Now I've had a bit more hypnosis. Now I've had something else. I've, you know, now I'm a grown-up. Now I'm a mum. Now I'm a wife, you know, not an older wife, mum, et cetera, you know. And all I've got a good career and all of those things. And I'm going to be fine. But, of course, I wasn't. And those deep, dark, you know, moments, well, they weren't moments. I did it all day long, you know, all day long that I ate and humiliated myself. I couldn't get it in my head, but, you know, but I eventually got down onto my knees and I was broken enough to start listening and start listening to this stuff and start listening to this book and start listening to people that could tell me that I really was broken and I really was a compulsive overeater and that my self-knowledge was not going to fix it and I had to find a power greater than myself, and thank God I've been able to do that. So that's all. I'll pass. Thank you.
Thank you, Charlotte O from the UK. Chris C, good morning, followed by Pedro B.
Hi, I haven't shared on this meeting yet, and I'm kind of new again, you know, the last few days or so. This paragraph, I probably am the poster child for self-knowledge would fix it, but when Fred said he was interested and conceded that he had some of the symptoms, but he was a long way from admitting that he could do nothing about it himself, and he was positive he could, you know, figure it out. And I had the worst, I mean, I've been in and out maybe for over 10 years, never in for very long, maybe a few weeks here, a few weeks there, you know, vast stretches of time where I thought, oh, I'm not powerless. You know, I'm not a food addict. Gave away literature I had purchased. I was so convinced of that. And I could never get the whole powerless thing. I thought, well, somebody's got to do something. And I figured it had to be me. I thought, well, if I'm powerless, what am I supposed to do? You know, I've got to handle this. And confusing me was also, you know, I have a relationship with God that I have for, you know, a few decades now, and I thought, well, you know, what are they talking about, a spiritual awakening? I don't know, you know, how can I get any closer to God than I am? So there was just a lot of misconnects, and I think this meeting, the line by line in the big book is really helping, because it really drills down to the bottom essence of the whole thing, and I have a whole new attitude. I know I'm powerless. I understand it finally, what it means, and I'm grateful for that, and with that, I'll pass.
Thank you, Christy. And where are you calling from, please?
Texas.
Texas. Great. Thank you. Pedro B., good morning, followed by Blake G.
Good morning. Can I be heard?
Yes, thank you.
Thank you. My name is Pedro B. I live in San Bernardino, California. I'm happy to be here. Fred, if I was to put my name in there, it would fit me perfect. I would not believe myself a compulsive overeater, much less accept a spiritual remedy for my problem. You told me what you knew about compulsive overeating, right? I was interested, yeah, and considered that I had some of the symptoms. But I was a long way from admitting that I would do, that I could not do something about it myself. I was positive that this humiliating experience plus the knowledge I had acquired will help me stay abstinent the rest of my life. Self-knowledge would fix it. And in fact, it hasn't. You know, the one thing that I know is that I am a compulsive overeater now. I am a compulsive overeater. And I know the solution is to abstain from, right, I'm mentally ill. My mind tells me that I'm not, that I can control and enjoy my eating. You know, I have the right to eat what I want. You know, and I'm in trouble. You know, I am in trouble. Definitely, I don't feel, recovered because I'm not. I remember my sponsor telling me, if you feel disconnected, it's because you are, you know. I've been suffering from another episode of depression. I lost interest in everything, including my OA program, you know, and I'm in trouble. I'm in trouble. Thanks for letting me share.
Thank you, Pedro B. from California. And Blake G., can you close us out, please? Press star 1 to unmute, Blake.
Hi, this is Blake G. from North Carolina.
Welcome.
I could really, really relate with Fred. I'm a relatively new compulsive overeater. I definitely have this affliction, and I relapsed not that long ago, so I've only got a few days under my belt again. And I thought that once I admitted I'm a compulsive overeater and I did the steps, that I would be totally healed, that I'd be good. But apparently that's not the case. That's not true. I have this disease. I really relate with Fred quite a bit, because I've got a lot of skill sets. I have a lot of willpower. I was far from admitting that I was a compulsive overeater, that I am a compulsive overeater. There was a lot of self-humiliation, and I thought for sure that I could fix it. But really, it does require something much, much greater than myself. And that was a tough relationship for me to find. I never thought that I was the higher power or anything like that. I know if I'm sitting in front of a tidal wave, I can tell you right now where the higher power exists. But it's not here. So when I'm in trouble, I can, as my sponsor taught me, I can seek God, and He'll come rushing to me. And that really works. But I have to have and maintain that awareness to be able to do that. And that is one of the challenges that got me last time, was I didn't have that awareness, not just self-awareness, but awareness beyond myself to allow my higher power in It's not even allow him in. He's in whether I realize it or not. He's already in. You know what I mean? So it's me just letting go and maintaining that awareness throughout the day. And this is just such an amazing, amazing paragraph because I so much relate to Fred in so many ways. And thanks for letting me share. And I am a grateful, recovering, compulsive overeater. Thank you.
Thank you, Blake G. from North Carolina. Thank you to everyone who shared, and thank you to Team Friday. Please join us for a second unrecorded hour of study immediately following closing. And the share ID for today, Friday, May the 22nd, the 7 a.m. meeting is 23483. That's 23483. We will now close with the reading from the Big Book on page 164, followed by the Serenity Prayer. And this morning, Colleen M. is going to read A Vision for You. Our book is meant to be suggestive only. Good morning, Colleen.
Good morning, Lynn. Thank you so much. Colleen M. from Maryland, recovered compulsive overeater. Our book is meant to be suggestive only. We realize we knew only a little. God will constantly disclose more to you and to us. Ask him in your morning meditation what you can do each day for the man who is still sick. The answers will come if your own house is in order. But obviously you cannot transmit something you haven't got. See to it that your relationship with him is right and great events will come to pass for you and countless others. This is the great fact for us. Abandon yourself to God as you understand God. Admit your faults to him and to your fellows. Clear away the wreckage of your past. Give freely of what you find and join us. We shall be with you in the fellowship of the Spirit, and you will surely meet some of us as you trudge the road of happy destiny. May God bless you and keep you until then.